calling me Larry.
Hello, Larry.
Hats off to Larry.
Larry. Fucking Larry.
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 Larry. Larry, get into bed now.
Is there no sweeter sound than that of your own name buried in cheers and applause? Of course there is not. Hey everybody, look at this. It's the Christmas season. And be aware, this is not the Christmas show. It's kind of a pre-Christmas show. And I realized I've been away from the mailbag for a while, and there are some pressing questions that need answering. This time of year can be a pressure cooker, because there are so many expectations from everyone, from employers and family and girlfriends, and on and on and on, it can just make you nuts. So let's get to that first question, shall we? It's from Joe, and he says, "Hey Larry, I'm a sales manager for a national company, and this time of year drives me crazy. Not only must I appear at the company holiday party, but I get loads of invitations to client parties. I'm expected to attend these, at least the local ones, but they are a colossal pain in the ass. Any ideas to help me minimize the pain? Thanks, Joe." The lament of the salesman. Everyone who's not in sales thinks, look at that lucky bastard. Big fat expense account. Company car, out on the road, adventures all the time, and we're stuck in the home office with the same old, same old. Well, there's a reason the guys in sales knock down some pretty good cake, and it's because they have to put up with more shit than anyone in the outfit. People think it's all just snappy presentations and lunch and travel, when in fact it's listening to endless complaints and asshole co-workers trying to poach your territory and meeting quarterly numbers and getting deals competitors have snagged thrown in your face by your boss. Worst of all, some customers can be tremendous assholes. Which reminds me of an incident I should have included in episode 52, Larry gets sexually harassed. It completely slipped my mind. Or maybe subconsciously, since it happened at a company Christmas party, I buried it until now. Well, no matter. So I was at the company holiday party, a big deal every year, a schmooze fest where clients could stuff their faces with caviar and filet and exotic boozes and go home with gift bags full of perfumes or pieces of jewelry and so on. The corporation spent a ton of money on it. And of course, all the sales force was expected to come early and leave late and laugh at every stupid joke and hand clients drinks and tell them how smart and witty and attractive they were. And since there was always an orchestra of some type, dance with them as well. Sometimes that was okay. There could be pointy chicks in ankle strap heels and seamed nylons and dresses slid up to their ribs, and that could be very, very nice. But they didn't all look like that. Only a small portion did, as with the general population. Some were not so easy on the eyes or the ears or the psyche. And I had this client who represented a substantial dollar value to the company and also to me by way of commission. And she was always difficult to deal with, just sort of skirting the edges of nasty. But I didn't give a shit. She never crossed the line to insulting or abusive, just kind of an angry broad. And I kind of got why she was so pissed off all the time, for she had not, as they say, hit the genetic jackpot. She was not a 10, or even a 5. I'm not sure she was even a positive integer. But, and this is an important but, I suspect a major contributor to her hostile demeanor, she did everything she could to make herself unattractive. Her hair appeared to be styled by her pillow. Not a trace of makeup, and clothing looked more like upholstery. It was clear she wasn't even trying. So, I always treated her as nicely as I could, but it was a struggle. She had control of some large budgets at a major advertising agency and used that contrivance of tough negotiator to legitimize her shitty personality and shittier attitude. She was really rough duty. So I'm standing at the bar in this enormous ballroom at the Plaza Hotel in New York, and way down the other end of the bar, I see her, Emma. And she sees me, and I throw her a big smile and raise a glass to her, and she sort of nods and turns away to talk to some underling she had dragged along to this party. And I figure, well, I'll circle by in a few minutes after I fortify myself with a drink. And I look at her again, and I notice she's got five, count them, five shots of vodka lined up like she's partying at Senior Frog's in Cancun, and bing, bang, boom, she downs those belts like a pelican. And I think, well, I guess she has some talent. A few minutes later, I feel a tug at my sleeve, and there she is, and I'm thinking, Christ, is she going to complain about something here? And I'm trying to recall if anything had gone sideways lately with her account. And she surprises me by saying not even hello or how are you, but...
I want to dance.
Not as a request, but like a demand or a command. Now, there are women of a certain appearance and demeanor and costuming whose demands or even commands I might enjoy complying with. But she wasn't on that list. They say life's too short to dance with ugly women, but not if you're being paid to. So out we go, onto the floor, and begin to, as they say, cut a rug. And I've got on my best Don Draper game face, and I'm asking about her holiday plans and telling her she looks great, and I'm lying so fast and so furious I should be running for office. And she's giving me monosyllabic answers, if any at all. And I look out to the perimeter, and I see a very good pal of mine, Jack, and Jack drills me with a look that says, I feel your pain. And the song ends, and I ask her if I can get her a drink, and she says,
we're not finished dancing.
Okay, so it continues. And then it hits me. If the band plays a slow song, I may have to feign a cardiac episode. I start to mentally calculate exactly how much her business means to my yearly income and measure that sum against the emotional scarring I'll sustain if I actually have to embrace her. And I'm thinking, wait, now she's no marathoner, so at this pace, she's gotta get tired, or thirsty, or take a leak, or something. But she keeps on truckin'. And another song finishes, and she's nowhere near quitting, even though now she's sweating like Seabiscuit at Pimlico. And I'm praying the band plays something with like 140 beats per minute so she'll finally collapse. And it keeps on going. And another song, and another, and now I'm thirsty as hell and sweating myself, and so I tell her, hey, Emma, how about a drink? I need to hydrate. And this crazy bitch says,
no, we dance until I say we stop.
And now I'm wondering, have I maybe already had a cardiac episode, and this is some fucking hallucination I'm having while a paramedic is paddling my chest in an ambulance? But then I look to the perimeter again, and Jack is staring at me. He's been watching the whole time in abject horror. If I don't draw the line, this troll is going to demand I take her home and bang her. All I want to do at this point is sweep her to the floor with a low kick, but her center of gravity is so near the ground, she'd probably just pop back up like a goddamn weeble. And the band plays something Speedy, and I'm wondering what happened to all those vodka shots I saw her guzzle, and suddenly she just stops and plants her feet wide and stares at me, and her eyes bulge, and a hand comes up from her side and clamps over her mouth. Instinct kicks in as I take two big backward steps, and from between her fingers, a spray of puke shoots out several feet. And then she drops her hand and folds from the waist and puts her hands on her knees, and up come all the hors d'oeuvres. I'm seeing pigs in a blanket and whole unbroken Ritz crackers and shrimp toast and caviar and cream and spinach puffs and mini quiche. And what the fuck, does she ever chew anything, or does she eat like she drinks? Her gullet must have the girth of a sewer line. And there's now a spreading puddle of upchuck about the size of a hula hoop, and though the band is playing, all dancing has ceased, and all eyes rest upon her and me. And finally, she pulls herself upright and glares at me. Then she wipes the back of her hand across her mouth and walks away. And I just cannot stop taking inventory from the floor. Her stomach must have had the capacity of a stew pot. Well, she wound up pulling her business anyway. So the moral of the story is, life is too short to dance with ugly chicks. And when they're psychos, that goes double. Now, where the hell was I with Joe's question? Oh, yeah. So, Joe, my advice to you this holiday season is to study and perfect a technique I mastered years ago. It's called the Larry Cameo. And it works like this. You go to a party, any party, where more than, say, 15 or 20 are gathered. And you know from jump, or ascertain quickly, that you do not want to hang around for more than one quick drink. At the same time, you don't want to insult the host or disappoint your boss or client. Within a few moments of arrival, find someone you know and make a big, loud fuss over them. Hey, Jimmy Johnson, you rascal, where the hell you been keeping yourself? Just backslap him hard and tell him he looks great, and then amble over to the bandstand and lay a stick across a zildjian, not hard enough to be stupid, but enough so that you are seen and heard by all. Then, settle down somewhere near an exit. And when the crowd is distracted with music and food and dance, just drift away like a puff of smoke. You will have been seen having a great time. You've fulfilled your obligation to your clients. And if you're worried that you bailed too soon and somebody might be pissed off, just drop them a personal note telling them how much you enjoyed their fantastic party and regretted you had to leave early because your wife or kid or dog or parakeet wasn't feeling so good. And do not dance with any psycho grimbos, Joe. There's just no pleasing them. Next up, I have a missive from Garrett. Here's what he says. Hey, Larry. I've been dating this girl since Halloween, and we dig each other and it's going good, but she's dropping some pretty broad hints that she'd like to be invited to Christmas dinner with my family. I've kind of got mixed feelings about that. Our family Christmas dinner is always just the immediate family, except for when my sister brought home her boyfriend, who is now her ex-husband. So, not only may it be too soon, there's sort of a jinx factor at work, too. What do you suggest? Well, Garrett, your instinct is correct. It is too soon. But luckily, you have plenty of options for defusing this little time bomb, and you should still be able to keep her thinking you're her ever-loving man. The truth is usually the best. Why not just tell her Christmas dinner is always a closed-door affair, and then offer to take her out to a nice restaurant instead? You could mention your sister's jinx factor, but that might put other commitment ideas in her head. Now, you didn't give me any background info on your girlfriend. Maybe she's an orphan, or her immediate family is in prison, or whatever. And for some reason, she's looking for that feeling that family Christmas dinner is supposed to deliver, but doesn't always. The holidays are such a minefield, especially in relationships. The media says everybody must be paired up for Christmas, and if we're not, we're somehow defective. Well, that's nonsense, isn't it? Nothing is ever what it seems. Even in that first Christmas, that pairing was just a marriage of convenience, wasn't it? But hey, Garrett, that gives me an idea. If you want to offer her a cagey substitute for dinner with the family, why not get religion? Take her to a church service. That will make her think you're somehow serious about something, even though you'll probably be reviewing porn videos in your head as you stand there in God's house. Which brings us to question number 3 from Heath. I actually have a listener named Heath. How providential. That's my all-time favorite candy bar. And Heath says, Larry, I met a very cool chick upon returning to my sophomore year at college. Christmas is fast approaching, and I'm clueless as to what to get her for a gift. I want it to be something she'll like, but not something that says, let's get married. Can you help me? This is yet another dilemma the holidays force us to deal with. Guys are so much easier to shop for. There's never a message. You know, bottle of scotch, bottoms up. Fancy jackknife, here, cut something. A shirt, wear this. But with chicks, every goddamn thing has layers of meanings and subtext and messages. It can make you bleed from your hair follicles. Flannel PJs? What's this? He thinks I'm a cuddle friend and not a lover? Or how about Victoria's Secret lingerie? She's thinking, what am I, a whore? Jewelry? Rings are way too risky. Hard to fit and might make her think it's a prelude to an engagement. Bracelets are better. They fit anybody. And if it doesn't turn her wrist green, you're okay. Earrings and necklaces, too. If you want to let her know she'll never mean more to you than the floor mats of your car, get her a nice selection of that L'Occitane bath shit. She may even take it the wrong way and figure you're telling her she stinks. So what you need to do, Heath, is strike a balance between interest and disinterest, or intimacy and casual, and that's not easy. Those travel cocktail kits are kind of cool. Sends a nice message. Let's have a drink and some fun. You can even get one chick style for mojitos and other girly libations. And if it works out the first time, it's refillable. Oh, but you're only a sophomore in college. You're probably a full-blown alky by now. Have at it. Whatever it is, remember, packaging counts. Which reminds me, chicks love stuff from Tiffany's. Why? Well, because it comes in that little blue box. Could be petrified cat shit, but if it'll fit on a charm bracelet and comes in a blue box, you'll be a hero. And although I like to bitch and moan, Christmas is actually a very cool time of year, and as I said, this episode is but a warm-up for what's in store. This very show, the first episode, which I failed to number because I thought it might be presumptuous, was all about Christmas. And the signature piece was a musical one, in which I assisted Charlie Brown in his long overdue suicide. I never could stomach that little neurotic creep, and I have no regrets about burying him with his great pumpkin and junkyard Christmas tree and all his other depressing shit. That said, it is a big anniversary, and I've got a special Patreon-only Christmas 2017 episode, which may or may not contain a gas bomb pending clearance from the dojo attorneys. If they advise against it, I still will not disappoint, I promise. So what I'm trying to say is here, stay fucking tuned. We're very fluid at the dojo, as Bruce Lee advised us to be. And so in the next few weeks, you never know what the hell I'll be posting. So get to my homepage, thatlarryshow.com, and click that subscribe by email button so you don't miss a thing. If you don't get a confirming email, chop chop, yep, check your spam folder. Follow the show on Twitter and Facebook and Gab. It's all the same address, That Larry Show. I have a new Christmas song that you will dig. It's even better than Charlie Brown's Suicide. Keep an eye out for that. I may release it separately from an episode. I'm just not sure yet. And I just finished a fantastic bonus episode, number 11, How Not to Be a Victim. Especially at this time of year, when hyenas are on patrol just looking for someone to take down. You listen to this bonus episode, and you will be impervious to predators. On the street, at the office, at school, anywhere. Don't miss it. At patreon.com/thatlarryshow. And so, my friends, as we hurtle together into Yuletide bliss or misery, remember this, Christmas comes but once a year, and none of us know how many we'll get. If you get a choice between nasty and nice, try to be nice, or at least not too nasty. I'll see you next Tuesday at the dojo, right here at the crossroads of madness and enlightenment. And until that time, be kind.